Good morning, this is Jonathan Frakes, Will Raker from Star Trek TNG, and you are listening to Too Much Scrolling.
I'll see you in the future.
Welcome to Too Much Scrolling for March 5th, 2024. I'm Steve Fodor.
I'm Spicy Chip Hasenfloss, Steve.
Just baby spice. We're just a couple of guys sitting around talking about things that are important to us. Hopefully they're important to you. If you need more information, there's so many great ways to find more information. Orion's belt is a big waste of space. That's a terrible joke. Only 3 stars. Welcome to Steve is in the middle of musical season and spinning his wheels week here on Too Much Scrolling.
Well, as long as there's popcorn buckets involved, Steve.
There you go. Got something to look forward to.
Film at 11.
Brings us to our film at 11, our movie of the week. You, sir, went to the popcorn bucket movie of 2024, Dune Part 2.
Exactly, Steve. Exactly. I saw it at the Alamo Draft House here in Raleigh. Not the AMC where the heavily sought after popcorn bucket is available, Steve.
Oh,
we'll put popcorn. We'll put a link to that popcorn bucket that many people are seeking out, Steve.
It is a big part of the conversation around this movie. I am not a fan of Dune. I never really read the books. I think I've tried to read the books. This is a science fiction franchise that you really find people that love it. And then there's the rest of us that don't get Dune.
All right. So this is Dune Part 2. I got to see it opening night. I got to see it with full crowd and people who really wanted to be there, and I was there because, doggone it, I review movies.
Mm-hmm.
So what I need you to know is that after it was over, I turned to the couple next to me and I said, well, what did you guys think of it? Because, you know, they go, well, we didn't read the book. There's the first thing, that mm-hmm. if you didn't read the book, there's a lot going on in this story. And they were kind of confused about all the different things going on, and they felt they were missing part of the story. So when you see Dune, you're thinking like Lord of the Rings, like this massive epic. Mm-hmm. You know, this is one of those hardcore science fiction books that has been around. It's the test of time. It's still here. You're thinking Game of Thrones. You know, you got different houses competing, a little bit less sex because there's no HBO involved. But you know it's going to be a big, big type of story. And this is, I mean, to be crass about it, you know, it's not good, it's not bad, it's just beige. Mm. So this is a lot of sand. Now, listen, most people are not going to agree with me. This film has been well-reviewed.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm talking about a person who, one, I have not read these books, and I kept looking for, you know, there's no sweeping theme music in this. It's not like John Williams wrote a score to it. You get the bang. Okay. We've got our Luke Skywalker character. George Lucas must have pulled from everywhere because there you can see Tatooine all over this.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. We've seen the politics to put together a chosen one who is going to lead this group of people to who've got this drug, this spice that they would like to protect. You know, I don't know, any different than the people of the Congo trying to protect the cobalt, right?
Mm-hmm.
So when you use a spice, it gives you these eye-opening ayahuasca-type moments. You get to see things. There are planets who want to control the spice. They want to control the mining of the spice. You know, not any different than people trying to control the Congo. You know, what you're really getting down to is that this is incredibly visually impressive. The costumes are incredible. It's got an incredible cast. It's got this incredible story they're pulling from. You know it's there, and that must be what people are seeing. Is it really delivered on screen. Well, I found it very beige. You're in the desert. What are you looking at? You got browns and other browns and blacks. You go to another planet where the big fat guy is, and it's filmed in black and white because their society is black and white. You have your Darth Vader type of character who fights the Luke Skywalker character. They're cousins. They're going to fight at the end. To the death, Steve. To the death.
Mm-hmm.
And they put it together. It ends. It sets up the third movie. So if you got through the first one and you got through the second one, you know, I just can't imagine that the third one's going to come out and then somebody's going to say, you know, on cable television, how they rotate the MCU movies or all the Star Wars movies kind of just play on repeat, or you've seen Roadhouse and Shawshank Redemption. I just can't imagine this is going to be that type of film where, I mean, it's just a slow burn. There's a lot going on. I don't know if this is how you would feel about it.
My opinion of the story that I have never read and I've never seen these movies is just that. It is a full story. It is a full epic, but the pacing and the way that they tell the story does not appeal to me. It is not Star Wars. It is not that serialized Flash Gordon style of storytelling. It has so much nuance to it, but you have to experience that nuance.
Well, and my feeling is the person maybe who read Game of Thrones and loves serious science fiction. I mean, interesting that I would have this divide versus the fantasy science fiction. Yeah, maybe that this is made for them. And I think that they're probably really enjoying this. I'm just a viewer. And I did read Lord of the Rings after I watched the films. I think it's supposed to be that. And I just can't see it. So anyway, 60 out of 100, and not the other critics are going to agree with me. They're all rating this much higher.
Yeah, 94% on Rotten Tomatoes and audience score of 95%. So
yeah,
interesting. There's definitely a group of people that love this storytelling.
Well, we are in a magic time. Maybe we can find our micro audiences.
There you go,
Steve. Maybe. Speaking of micro audiences.
It's a great transition. That's my favorite transition of yours for 2024. We should send that straight to the Radio Hall of Fame. You watched a movie called Perfect Days. This is a very small, very simple story about a simple life and how maybe that's the answer. Maybe quiet and simple is the path to happiness.
Well, some people call me a simpleton, Steve.
I'm not sure that that's the same phrase that I was using, Chip.
Anyway, this is a Japanese film. It is, Steve, it's a reading film.
Mm-hmm.
It's called Perfect Days. This is about a young man, I shouldn't say young man, a man probably my age. And something must have happened to him. We don't know what happened to him. They're never going to tell you. But this is a man who's kind of decided to really simplify his life. At some point in the film, you're going to meet the sister. She's incredibly successful, very wealthy. But this is a man who lives a very simple life by choice.
Mm-hmm.
You can tell he is a learned man. He reads every single night before he goes to bed. He's got his cassette collection around from his youth. It's all music that you would know, probably from the 50s, 60s, 70s. He collects tree saplings and puts them in a pot and grows them. But his real job is cleaning toilets. And he gets up in the morning from his very modest, humble home, goes outside to the machine, basically gets a coffee, jumps in his van, heads over, and does exactly what he's expected to do with enthusiasm and happiness. Enjoy. He performs a full cleaning of these bathrooms, these public bathrooms in Japan.
Mm-hmm.
And he is part of life. There's a point where some kid is looking for mom And he heads out, and it's right next to a park. And, you know, they're looking for mom, and they find mom, and he delivers them to them. He has lunch every day. It looks like a bag lunch. He's eating a sandwich underneath the tree, takes pictures of the tree, and collects photographs of that. And then at the end of the day, he goes to the public bath, takes a shower, gets into the tub, soaks for a little while, and then takes his bike over and has dinner and goes home, reads, and goes to sleep, and wakes up the next day to do the same thing. It's a very modest life. He seems very content. He has exited life fast lane and chosen something that he's very comfortable with, and he seems very content. And this is a very interesting story. I don't think he says 5 minutes worth of dialogue in the whole film. Now, I do know that he has interactions with young people. They're not working as hard. They don't do things. He doesn't really complain about them. He just does it. And that's really an interesting part that he plays in this. There's a message here. It's certainly a very quiet film. And I give it 63 out of 100. And it's just maybe it's a lesson for us. Maybe you don't have to save the world. Maybe you just need to exist on the terms that you want to exist.
Finding joy in the present, in what you have and in what you do, is something that we talk about on the show a lot. The present, the now, being present, that very Eastern Japanese cultural idea is expressed very well in this one.
He exits his store every morning and he looks up to the sun. It bathes him just enough to get started. Anyway, very interesting. Beautiful. Steve, that's not the only film I got to see this week.
Hey, you got to see a preview at your Alamo Drafthouse of Problemista. Problemista is a very intriguing story of a young man from El Salvador struggling to bring his unusual ideas to life in New York City and running into this boss that he has.
A crazy woman, Steve. Truly, truly a crazy woman. And there's something to be said there. So our nationwide release for Problemista is going to be March 22nd, 2024. You can look forward to it. This was a preview showing. At the end of it, we had a question and answer with the two leads on this. The story is basically of a young man who has moved from El Salvador to the United States, and he needs to get a visa to be able to stay. And he has to have a sponsor to do that. He talks a little bit about the challenges of this. I don't think the trailer does this movie a lot of. It's trying to be kind of a mystical, fun little, playful story along with this crazy person in it. And I think that it's a little bit too ambitious for this. Now, Julio Torres, who is the lead actor and also the director, is a Saturday Night Live writer. So all of his skills are coming on to play here. But this is a very ambitious film. I enjoyed it. The message here is Alejandro is going to be very patient with this. And I call her just a crazy woman because she is. She is a person who makes demands on people that are unreasonable, followed by a switching of those demands in the middle of it. He refocuses her. He calms her. He solves the issue at hand. He makes her feel comfortable with knowing that tomorrow she could turn on him at any moment. And she does eventually. But what he learns at the end is how to use her craziness to kind of get what he needs. Because there's a time where he has to go in and has to stand up for himself after he did a lot of, you know, this and that. But anyway, he uses it, and it uses it effectively. Does it work in real life? Maybe, maybe. To get to sort of the surrealness part of this, Alejandro needs to make money. He constantly goes to Craigslist. Craigslist is this overweight man who is in a toga, kind of feminine, who is going to converse with him on the different opportunities there. There's a lot of playfulness in here. I don't know if it helps, but it does tell part of the story. I do think Julio Torres has an opportunity to write a number of films. We'll see how he grows, okay, because I think there's something here. I'll say 57 out of 100. This is not a, you know, a great film, but certainly many people will be entertained by it.
Okay. Very interesting. That's a very diverse list of movies that you saw this week, for sure.
See, that is too much scrolling. It's all about diversity.
Too much scrolling. Too much scrolling. Let's go see all sorts of different types of movies.
Well, Steve, it's about time you saw a film. Tell us about the film you got to see.
So there are certain movies that stick with you for a long, long time. And In Time is a timely movie about time that has stuck with me a lot. And this week, I watched this movie again. This was originally put out in 2011. This is a 13-year-old movie. And it came up in my thoughts this week when Elon Musk and Warren Buffett were having a conversation about currency. And Elon Musk said, there's only one currency. There's only one true currency, and that is time. And I thought, wow, that is very interesting philosophically, to think about what we do and all of the work that we do, and the only true currency is time. This movie is all about that. The metaphor of time is used as the capitalism of this story. This was written and directed by Andrew Niccol. You might know his work. I call it a trilogy of humanity. His three movies, Gattaca, The Truman Show, and then this one, In Time, are really a deep analysis of what life is from the mind of this New Zealander. And the idea here is everybody can stop aging at age 25. They can be immortally 25 years old for the rest of their life, but they also have a timer that they have to continuously replenish their time in order to survive any further than their 25th birthday. And the divide, the capitalism here, becomes the haves and the have-nots. The poor people are going to die early. They are suffering. They are trying to make ends meet to survive another day, literally, while the rich, who have an abundance of time, can spend their time on frivolous things and find their way through what they want to do with their time. I love this metaphor. Just as much as I love the metaphor of The Truman Show, I think that's probably his best film. That metaphor of what is reality is spectacular. This one works really well for me.
So this stars Justin Timberlake.
Mm-hmm. One of our actors, one of our great actors, Justin Timberlake. You don't think of Justin Timberlake as a great actor, but every time I see him on screen, I go, wow, that guy really has the talent of acting. As much as he's known for his music mainly, he's a showman. He is a performer. And when he's given a role in a movie, I believe him. And I forget very easily that he is Justin Timberlake in that role. Some of the thoughts that Andrew Niccol gave us in this that keep with me, that the metaphors that he's using for this Darwinian capitalism of time, spending time together, using time as the currency of this world, is something that sticks with me. The little girl, there's a little girl that walks up to Justin Timberlake and says, "Can you spare a minute?" And he goes, "Yeah, sure." And he transfers a minute of time of his life to hers. That's a metaphor that I think about a lot. Like, how am I spending my time and giving my time to others? And then I get into the idea of wasting time. How are we getting through this life? And are we wasting time? Is this valuable? And those metaphors really stick with me, with this silly running around shooting people sci-fi epic that makes me smile and makes me think a lot.
Book it.
Book it.
Brings us to our book of the week. I got a chance to sit down and read Patrick Stewart. Hey, Patrick Stewart has published his memoir, and he called it Making It So.
Steve, our listeners should grab a hot beverage, probably an Earl Grey tea. As we sit down and we learn a little bit about Sir Patrick Stewart, Steve.
Have I told you that I haven't had a cup of coffee in 30 days? I gave up drinking coffee. Guess what I'm drinking instead?
Martha.
Earl Grey. Hot.
Oh, really?
Yes. Patrick Stewart absolutely has an influence over my life. He is the star of Star Trek The Next Generation. As much as that was an ensemble cast, Patrick Stewart, the captain, Captain Jean-Luc Picard, was the center of that storytelling. And I really admire the man that Patrick Stewart is and the actor that he is. So reading this book was something that I looked forward to. This was published in October of 2023, and something special.
So tell me a little bit about it, because it seems like we're getting some of his before he was an actor, as he was struggling to become an actor.
Yeah, there's when you write your autobiography, and I mean when you do it, not if, but when, you have to decide how you want to tell your story. And there's a lot of decisions to be made with a memoir. Do you just want to talk about one period of time? Do you want to talk about your whole life? He chose to go with the route that I like the least in memoirs, which is a very chronological review of his life, beginning at the beginning, talking about his upbringing in the northern part of England, where they have a very different northern accent in the Yorkshire area, and talking about his desire to be that actor, to be on stage, to be that Shakespearean actor that he saw in his youth, that he thought that would be a great life for himself. He talks a lot about the struggles of early days of his acting career, finding his way, finding those parts, getting his foot in the door, and finally becoming a part of the Royal Shakespeare Company, which is pretty impressive in England. And he tells a great story. This is maybe the story that sticks with me the most. When he was at the stage door at the Royal Shakespeare Company, being a part, finally getting there, and there's autograph hounds out at the door, and they walk up to him and they go, "Are you somebody?" And he hesitated. He was like, "Well, I'm in the Royal Shakespeare Company. I've spent a huge amount of time and effort to get to where I am. But you obviously don't recognize me. I guess I'm not somebody." And I think about that person who was standing in front of Sir Patrick Stewart at that moment and didn't know who he was and didn't know who he would be in the future. And I think that that person would regret not giving that young man the moment of asking them for their autograph, to hear their story of acting. And I think about my students who are struggling and thinking about and wondering about what it would be like to be at the pinnacle of acting and the struggle that it takes to get there. This is a triumphant story of success in the acting realm.
So he went from, you know, a noble one to a person who was in Shakespeare theater to becoming a pop icon. Tell us a little bit about that.
He hated it. He hated being in genre fiction. He hated the idea of being the actor in Star Trek. He tells so many stories about trying to bring that Shakespearean gravitas to the part, and he certainly did. There's no doubt that he brought a certain level of commanding respect as the commander, as the captain of the ship, but he talks about how he sometimes treated his fellow actors as less than because they weren't approaching it from that same level of gravitas. And he's able to laugh at it now because his fellow actors made fun of him so much. He called a meeting as the captain of the ship, as the lead of this TV show. He called a meeting amongst the actors and he said to them, "We're not here to have fun. We're here to put on this program." And they laughed in his face. Like, how dare you? How dare you come at us and tell us we are screwing around too much on this TV show? You're not the director. You're not the producer. You are not in charge. Yes, you are playing the captain of the ship, but you're an actor, sir. You are just another one of us. We are forming these relationships. We're having this fun. We're having this moment together, and we want you to be a part of it. And he took that to heart. He heard that message. He finally realized how much this role in Star Trek could change people's lives. Change my life for sure. Having Star Trek around, thinking through how life is and how we can work together as a community, as a society, is an enormous part of Star Trek.
Well, I can immediately think of Alan Rickman in Galaxy Quest having the meltdown. I was a Shakespeare actor.
I'm sure that comes from Patrick Stewart. Who else is the Shakespearean actor who came to the little people in television? Oh, television. Oh, it's not as glamorous as Shakespeare. And to give that moment where he came to them and said, "We have to be more serious. We have to create this beautiful world together." Like, get out of here, Patty. He talks a lot about his romantic relationships and he has a lot of regrets. I listened to the audiobook version of this where Patrick Stewart himself is reading his story, and I can hear in his voice the huge regrets of his life. He's been married 3 times, and both of his failed marriages were his fault. He was the one who strayed in the marriages, and he lays out his feelings in this where he regrets what he had done to those people that he loved in the name of finding those connections. That's a hard part about acting, is you find connections in so many different places. You find connections with people, and sometimes in the acting world, those showmances, that romantic relationship that springs from the time you spend together, is not a really great way to find romance. It's fleeting because of that time commitment. And he really vocalizes his regrets in that arena.
Well, often enough, there's a word for it, right, Steve?
Yeah, that idea of the showmance, that time that you make a connection with somebody and you think, oh, this is something special. This is going to last forever. And it only lasts until the show ends and the next show begins. And then we make connections with those people that we love in the next production. And it doesn't work out sometimes, but sometimes it really does. Sometimes those non-romantic relationships, those family connections that we make in theater, last a long, long time. I got to see a lot of my former students this weekend. And just the connections that we have from 20 years ago, these kids who were 12 and now they're 30, and we still love and admire each other, and we see how we can work together to make stories, to make something special. It makes me smile just thinking about all of those connections.
Well, it seems like you had a good time reading this book. Is it an important book?
I think everybody who admires Patrick Stewart should read this book. I think that he is open and willing to tell us his story, his humble beginnings, his failures and to really look back at his life in a beautiful way. I think everybody that loves Star Trek and the X-Men franchises would love this story. I think one of the better connections is the story of Patrick Stewart and Sir Ian McKellen and how their friendship seems like something that is natural. We see the two of them together in the media all the time, and we think, wow, two Shakespearean actors, they must have met when they were 12 and worked together on the Shakespeare stage and come to love each other on such a special level. But he lays out the fact of the history is they met filming X-Men. That's where Sir Ian McKellen and Sir Patrick Stewart became this amazing work relationship that has gone on since then in such a beautiful way.
Well, it makes a lot of sense. I mean, think about dressing down the Star Trek cast. What does he get? He gets Ian McKellen, and all of a sudden, both of them can look at each other going, we are Shakespeare actors. We are thespians, Steve. We are thespians playing comic book characters.
And going on to do so much stuff together on stage and on screen. They did Waiting for Godot together and just reveled in the joy of the ridiculousness of Waiting for Godot. I can only imagine, I've never seen it, I can only imagine the two of them just sponging off of the joy and the terror and all of the other emotions on stage. This is a good memoir. I would not write it chronologically. I will write my memoir in terms of topics, in terms of moments that connect instead of chronological moments. But I really enjoyed listening to Patrick Stewart tell us about his life. That's Making It So, published in 2023, written by Patrick Stewart.
Scroll with it.
Brings us to our scroll with it. There's plenty of stuff happening in the world. Let's talk about almost none of it. Speaking of audiobooks, did you know that Spotify is now giving us audiobooks as a part of our premium subscription? Or those of you who have Spotify for free, you can buy into an audiobook subscription for $10 a month. That was announced this week.
Well, that's something, but there's some limitations to that.
It's a very frustrating.
From understanding the limitations, I don't think there's it's a true replacement for something like Audible. So tell us about that.
Audible is $15 a month for one title every month. Spotify is $10 a month, and it doesn't include one title a month. It includes 15 hours of audio every month. That limitation is extremely frustrating. I was going to report on the Making It So book a month ago, but my time on Spotify ran out before the book did. It's an 18-hour audiobook, so at the end of my 15 hours last month, I would not listen to the rest of that book. I could not experience it without giving them $25 to buy a copy of that audiobook. I had to wait until my credit to roll over 30 days later to finish that story.
That is bizarre.
Isn't it?
It is absolutely bizarre. And that they would choose 15 hours, because it truly is arbitrary. There are many books that are 28 hours or 40 hours. And, you know, it's one thing to choose super long books because, you know, it interests you. But it's another that, you know, it could take 3 months, Steve, to finish a book.
At that rate, that would be so frustrating to me. Of course, you and I are avid readers. I am reading so many books, listening to so many audiobooks that maybe this is not the subscription for me. Audible's plan may be the more economical, but what I hope is that people will get into audiobooks. The audiobook market has exploded in the last few years, and I think more people will get into this. This is an entry point where they will then find the better system outside of Spotify. Speaking of better systems, you've got Apple TV Plus in your home, and there's some classic movies that are being added for free to that system.
Well, I don't think that's the story. There's always been a few movies that they've added every month or so. So you get, usually on Apple TV Plus, you get all the movies that they have produced, right? Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. so they've got a nice body of shows and movies right now. But what they used to do was add, you know, three or four movies in addition to that, that you could watch along during the month. And hey, it's $5.99 a month or $6.99 a month, whatever it is. And it's something that you could enjoy. Well, things have become much more complicated now. I mean, between Netflix and Max and all the other services out there and the price they're charging, Apple TV Plus must be looking at eventually becoming one of those major services. They added 51 movies that you could watch. You basically could, if you have Apple TV Plus, you can pull them up and you can watch them. They're a very good list of modern type movies. So this is, they certainly didn't cheap out on it. They got good movies. But it's just showing you that we're getting a lot of changes, and this is an ever-evolving type of market right now.
Yeah, streaming services are struggling. There's a lot of people who are using the streaming services and leaving the streaming services and switching the streaming services. So every company is trying to find their niche in this, and adding a library of classic films. And these aren't the ones that are listed here: American Sniper and Zodiac. I get it. Arranging from A to Z. I get it. I get how a library could entice people at the low price point to be a part of the subscription here.
Well, it's not just that. They have really good, they have kind of become the modern version of what HBO used to be. A lot of their shows certainly resonate. And there's a lot of, you know, high production value. They're throwing good money at it. We'll see how it plays out over time, just like everything else.
Yep.
But this is just, you know, something just to be aware of.
Time for the AI chat of the day. Hey, Chip, have you heard about AI? Have you heard the good news of AI? Well, a college student was given an AI violation probation. And the story is kind of intriguing because we do want to check our students to make sure they're not using generative AI in their writing. But that's not the story here. Here, this college student was using Grammarly to edit her writing.
That's right. So when you turn in a paper at college right now, many times they're running it through some kind of process that shows whether it's been plagiarized or whether, you know, it has been computer generated. Mm-hmm. And that is very important now, especially if you're following all the scandals going on at Harvard right now. But what we're seeing right now is that this student who was, it sounds like, was on a scholarship and is on now probation, used Grammarly. Now, Grammarly, in its simple sense, goes through your paper and makes sure the punctuation is correct. You make sure that the sentences are clear and things of that nature. Well, that flagged artificial intelligence.
Mm-hmm.
The professor turned it in, gave a zero for it. The student, once again, is on probation, may have lost a scholarship. This is a very important story to follow because we have students out there. And what constitutes using an aid-assisted writing mm-hmm. versus something that is helping you tighten up your writing?
And that's the question. That's the question. That is the Luddite question of where is this state of technology and what are we willing to use this technology for before we go, no, that's an overreach. I would say Grammarly is the equivalent of spell check and grammar check in Microsoft Word. I don't think it's going beyond that at this point. Could it potentially? Are there features of Grammarly that could potentially change the way your words work and make them better words? And is that using AI to write your paper, or is that editing?
All right, so this is where it gets even more fascinating. First of all, the university's website, it's the University of North Georgia. suggest you or recommends using Grammarly to help with your papers, to help with clarity, to help with punctuation and all that. Grammarly found out about this and they got involved. They contacted the university, but the university has not responded yet and the professor hasn't responded yet. I think deep down, if you had a good student that was doing good work, the professor should have, and the university should have stepped in and stopped this before it became a national story.
Mm-hmm.
Because if I'm a student paying good money to go to university, and I'm seeing what a professor is willing to do to me, to basically attack me, to suggest that I cheated, then I'm going to have issues with the professor. I'm going to have issues with the university. Mm-hmm. I think the university is on trial here. I think they're going to have to step back, because I think the spirit of Grammarly was there,
mm-hmm.
and the students' intentions were there.
And I think the education system itself is on trial here, because what do we want for outcomes for these students? Did this student cheat? Did this student steal these ideas? I think our evidence here says no. They used these tools that are available to make their writing better. And I think we need to find that line between those things.
This isn't like the Harvard scandal going on, where the lead was lifting from, and I'm assuming, how about that? That like the Harvard challenge, where the guy was, or the person was lifting from Wikipedia and things like that, and you could find it. That mm-hmm. that's cheating.
That's cheating. That is plagiarism. That is taking somebody else's work and using it. Grammarly is not, in my opinion.
That's right. And I don't, and listen, I could be wrong, but it doesn't sound like, from everything that's being released to the public right now, that the paper is being lifted from something. So anyway, very fascinating, and something to follow, especially for our students out there.
Mm-hmm. Also, we keep talking about gambling. Gambling is on the headlines for 2023. Turns out sports gambling is a gateway drug, Chip. There you go. There's some clickbait.
There you go. At least it's thought that way. By the way, yes, Steve, online gambling with your smartphone is mm-hmm. legal in North Carolina as of this recording. It happened over last weekend. Let's see what kind of fun things happen to our young people and to our people going on right now.
Biff Tannen is interested to find out what's going to happen when gambling is legalized across the country. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Americans legally bet about $120 billion last year, and that's going to go up. It's almost a 28% increase from 2022. And sports betting hit almost $11 billion, up 44%. Now, you are armed with your cell phone. Steve, I don't know what you've experienced, but I heard that cell phones, these smartphones, could be addicting.
Mm-hmm.
Imagine adding gambling to it. What could go wrong?
We see it in school all day long. The addictive quality of the dopamine that kids get from using that device, getting that little hit of dopamine, is something that we are fighting against all day long in school. Add money to that, add gambling to that, add the addictive quality of that, and you've got a scary world.
$23 billion, Steve, on the Super Bowl alone.
Mm-hmm.
That's how much gambling was transaction. I think this is going to be a nightmare. I think 10 years from now, we're going to absolutely look back and say, what were we thinking? Because humans, their brains work a certain way.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a reason why. Listen, we didn't say you couldn't gamble, but there's a reason why there's Las Vegas, right? Or you have to go to the casino. Yeah, you have to
make the effort to get there.
And if it's at every mm-hmm. gas station, every pub out there, you're going to see some of the challenges it will provide.
It's terrifying. I am afraid of the gambling addiction. I do not have an addictive personality. I don't have a gaming personality, but I know how many of my students do.
Well, you could easily be sucked into it, Steve. Mm-hmm. Some people are sucked into listening to lots of podcasts. That's terrible. Steve, let's move to something that lifts humanity off of this world and helps us see beyond ourselves. So let's shoot a rocket and land it on the moon this week.
Our out-of-this-world story of the week. The United States landed on the moon for the first time in 50 years. How about that as your headline?
All I can think of is Dumb and Dumber. As he's part, we landed on the moon.
You did it! You finally did it! An independent company launched a rocket into space and landed on the moon. Intuitive Machines is the name of the company, and they were very proud of getting on the moon, successfully landing on the moon, and then the lander fell over. How disappointing.
And what that means is that the solar panels are now covered with moon dust, which means they don't get anything done.
Power. So after a day or two of sending signals back, that lander is now pretty much dead on the surface of the moon. And what a disappointment that had to be for all of those engineers, all of those people working on this project. They made it. They made it to the moon for the first time in 50 years. And then it fell over. He fell right over.
Where is our Superman, Steve, to go and make things right?
Do you have to turn back time? If I could turn back time.
I feel like I'm going to share videos, Steve.
Can you tell it's musical season? Steve singing Cher again.
That's from Dodgeball, by the way. When the average Joes come out. I feel like I'm in a chair video, Steve.
There you go. I don't know, Chip. I think we have enough information to survive another week. What do you think?
Only if we can come back next week, Steve.
I think so. I think we're going to be even more slap happy next week. We'll look forward to musical season and its effects on the human body. We would love to hear from you. Give us a call or a text. Our phone number is 805-4104-TMS. Our website is TooMuchScrolling.com. Our email is TooMuchScrolling@gmail.com. We're on all of the social networks. We're on Spotify and Apple Podcasts and YouTube. And you can always ask your smart speaker to play the latest episode of Too Much Scrolling. I want to thank you again for listening to Too Much Scrolling. I'm Steve Foder.
I'm Chip Hasenflug.
Spicy Chip
Hasenflug.
Thanks for spending time with us. We'll see you in the future.